Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everyone and my Liberty lovers, this is Amber S. joining you on Living with Freedom Radio on Freedomizer Radio. And this is our first episode. So this is our pilot episode, and we are excited. I say we because I have a special guest who's going to be joining us a little bit later. And so we're excited to be talking about what living with freedom looks like, especially on the day of, you know, our celebration of freedom, which is today, the, you know, Independence Day, our big celebration. So there's a few little fun facts that we're going to be dropping a little bit later. I wanted to give you a quick introduction of a little bit about who I am, Amber S., and my ministry, Living with Freedom, and then also just kind of give an introduction on what we're going to be looking at doing on this radio show so you have an idea of who to be inviting. This is definitely something that I want to have very interactive. If you have questions about the things we're talking about, or the topics we're covering, or you just want to, you know, share your two cents and contribute to the conversation, we'll have plenty of guest speakers along the way, as well as plenty of time for Q&A along the way as well. And so I'm going to share a little bit about myself. My name is Amber S. I'm a mother. I'm a natural health care provider. I'm a homeschool advocate, a private membership association advisor, a ministry director. I am a freedom of medical choice advocate, and I was forced to dive in and learn the protections available to us within the private domain. After learning many of the things that are no longer commonly taught in our society, I knew that the only choice I had was to learn as much as I possibly could, and then to turn that around and use that knowledge to educate and share with others and help them properly implement their own protections too. And my purpose in life is really to help others discover and fulfill their God-given purpose by living with freedom. I also believe that government was established for a specific purpose, and that purpose should be limited. It was designed to be limited, and that's what they should be limited to. It does not include interference in our private lives. Now, one of the things you're going to learn about me is if you know anything about personality colors, I am like a green blue. So the four colors are red, green, blue, and yellow. I'm jumping right in. So red personalities are kind of like your type A, sometimes known as like your control freaks who like just the brass tacks, like let's get down to business, right? The green personalities, those are your analysts, your data people. Sometimes they struggle with analysis paralysis. The blue personality color, those are more your social butterflies. They're your ralliers. They're going to be the ones that get people together and really make it engaging. And then yellow personalities are the helpers. They don't necessarily want the limelight. They just love to help contribute and bring things together. So I'm kind of a balance between that green need to know everything before I can do anything. And I also want to bring people together, and I want to make things relatable, because if there's anything I know is when you know that there's a gut feeling that something's not right, the worst thing that can be done is either like preaching down at you that, oh, this is the right way, or just talking over your head like you're not ready. I wasn't ready for a lot of things that I was hearing. And so I just didn't do anything about it. I just let it kind of wash over me and, you know, felt like it was too overwhelming. And I want to change that. I want to help break things down. When we get that icky feeling that something's not right in the world, something's not right in our country or in our lives, let's break it down into bite-sized chunks, then we can figure out what to do about it. So that's a huge part of my personal purpose and a lot of what I do through my ministry. Living with Freedom Ministry is a private ministerial association. It's unincorporated, and one of the main things that I do through my ministry is help others set up their own private member associations or private ministry associations. And I'll talk about that throughout our show. It's not going to be like the main thing that I want to share, because here I really want to focus on what living with freedom looks like in all aspects of life. I want to cover your physical freedom, emotional freedom, mental freedom, and spiritual freedom, as well as just what that word means in everyday life, whether it's work, whether it's educating our kids, and every possible thing in between. For me, I try my best not to get political, because what we're really looking at is human rights, our natural God-given rights. And that really should not be political. It's something that we should be fighting for and learning about and defending. So today's episode, we're really going to focus on the topic of the day, Independence Day. When was the real Independence Day? Independence from what? For whom? Or for who? Sometimes that grammar one gets me. And so we'll cover some of those things. We'll also talk a little bit more about what we're going to hear today, in the series. So some of the things that I'll share, I may not share them every episode, every week, but I want to do like a little health highlight, something that we can do at home by ourselves or for ourselves to support our own wellness. Because we know if you've been in this medical freedom movement at all for any amount of time, we know that our bodies were innately designed to heal themselves. And they can't do that if we're not giving it what it needs to do its job. So something that I've been passionate about for over a decade is finding things that we can give ourselves, feed ourselves, apply on our skin, personal care products, you know, our hygiene products, all of that, to be able to feed our bodies, not poison our bodies. Something else I'm really passionate about is really supporting our spiritual freedom. I am so heartbroken by the number of religious organizations today that really take things out of context. And so for me, whenever I'm sharing whatever I'm sharing, it's really kind of focusing and honing things in back to the core basics, and not really having a lot of interpretation, really focusing on context. For me, context is key. And even with Independence Day, learning about the history of why we got to where we got, you know, learning about where we came from. And we know that our lives are a culmination of thousands of people that came before us, our ancestors. And so to think that history is not important, that's like a stab in my heart. So those are just some of the things that I really like to focus on. So for me, context is key, both spiritually and in history. Something else I want to touch on is really diving into nutrition, because as we're feeding our bodies, we're also feeding our brains. So that's something else I want to touch on too in our share. And then, hang on, I had a little glitch here. Let me move this over. Because it's launch day, you might have to bear with me a little tiny bit, because we're, still getting the hang of the ropes here and doing the best we can. Okay. All right. So some of the other things that we will be touching on today, we'll bring in my guest. Her name is Sarah. And we're going to touch on really what we're celebrating when we're celebrating Independence Day. Yes, we're celebrating freedom and our liberties. That's, you know, kind of the given. So today we're going to dig a little bit deeper about what exactly we're celebrating, how the dates even came along that we're celebrating this on this day. Sorry about that. I have a dog in the background. So what we're even celebrating and what day really we should be celebrating and why today ended up being the day of all days throughout the whole year that, you know, was chosen for our Independence Day. And get a little bit of context. What was going on at that time that this needed to happen, this Declaration of Independence? And I'm going to say that with emphasis, this declaration, this proclamation. You know, a declaration, it's not just a piece of paper. It's declaring. It's standing firm in something. So as we look at what we're doing, as we celebrate our independence, semantics and you know, our vocabulary really do matter. So when we think about the Declaration of Independence, I'm going to ask you guys, don't just look at it as a sheet of paper. A Declaration of Independence was declaring their independence. So that's a really, really big thing to focus on. Something was loading here, funny. One of the last things I want to touch on here before we kind of move on to the next thing here is really realizing that our founding fathers had so much more depth than we learned in school. Something, I'm going to say this a lot. A lot of the things I'm passionate about come down to unlearning the things that we thought we knew or the things that we thought were true and kind of unlearning that and relearning what truth is, truth with a capital T. For me, truth with a capital T means integrity, it means transparency, and it means authenticity. And really going back to the original intent. One of my favorite books, and I'm actually going to share this with you, shameless plug because it's not an affiliate thing. One of my favorite books that I'm reading is called Original Intent, The Courts, the Constitution, and Religion by David Barton. So this book has been truly pivotal in my transformation in the work that I'm doing now, or really the labor of love that I'm doing. Because when we focus on the original intent, and this goes back to that context I was talking about before, when we get back to the original intent, we're really getting to the heart of what was happening and why this decision was made and how we can then apply it to our lives today. So it really is taking us on a journey. And that's what I felt like we were missing so much in our history classes growing up and our social studies, our civics classes, if you even had a civics class, is getting back to the context and rationalizing, going through the logic of what happened and realizing what decisions were made and why. So much of history class is just memorizing facts, but we don't get to the heart of the why. And that really comes down to the intention behind our public school system. I should have had this quote. I was not planning on sharing this one today because I'm going to touch on this in a different episode, but I'll just kind of briefly cover it today, and I'll give the exact quote some other time. But one of the original founders of what we now know as the Department of Education, he was quoted saying something to the effect of that this education system was not designed to create independent thinkers or critical thinkers or philosophers. It was to create compliant workers. And when I learned that, that blew my mind and it made so much sense. It's why I've kind of cultivated this this sort of avatar, this character of being a rebel with a cause. I don't just like to rebel because I don't like rules. If I see a rule or a policy or a concept that doesn't make sense, I like to get to the heart of why it doesn't make sense. And then touch on, okay, if that doesn't make sense, what does make sense? So the entire education system didn't want us to learn original intent. Intent is the why behind all of these things. So when we start digging down into that quote-unquote rabbit hole of original intent and the why behind what happened, we can really get to understand where we got, like how we got to where we are now. So those are some of the things that I'm really going to hit home really hard on this series, because the more we can learn about how we got to where we are now, the more we can know the path forward. And the reason that's so important is our founding fathers and mothers, they set out a system that's actually pretty darn good. No one's perfect because we're all humans and we're, you know, born sinners, basically. So realizing that they were still flawed humans, our founding fathers and mothers did the best they could with what they had. And if you compare it to anything else in history, in current, you know, that's current or in the past, I can almost guarantee with almost certainty that you will not find anything as close to perfect without looking at the Bible. Like, our kingdom of heaven culture and environment is really the closest we're going to get without, you know, Jesus coming back kind of thing. So when we extrapolate that and compare it to what we have with our Constitution and our founding documents and what our founders and framers set up for us, we've got it pretty dang good. And it's just staying true to that nature, to that intent and that reason, that critical thinking of why things happened and why they are the way they are, that we're going to understand where our freedoms are and how to protect them, how to protect them and defend them. That's one of the biggest questions I get in the work that I do is, why didn't I know about this stuff and how do I enforce it? And so that sent me down many rabbit holes of investigation and research and studies, digging into, okay, what is truth with a capital T? And now how do we take that and use it to protect us? Because even the Constitution, and you'll hear me say this a lot because I do say it a lot, even the Constitution is just a piece of paper unless you know what the ink on that paper says and what it means and how to use it. So equipping ourselves with knowledge is huge. So with that, we're going to cut to, what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a brief intro on who I'm inviting into the call. We'll cut to commercial a little bit early here, and then we will start our chat with Sarah. So my friend Sarah, she is one of my nearest and dearest and closest friends. She is a mother of six, including one on the way. She's a wife to an awesome dude. I can vouch. I know them both, and they are really amazing people. I had this written down, and for some reason it's not pulling up. So anyway, she's also a constitutional scholar, one that I admire greatly. And she's a daughter of the one king and a lover of living history. So with that, I'm going to cut to a commercial here quick, and then we will talk with Sarah P.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, my fellow Liberty lovers. This is Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries, reminding you to tune in on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific time, for the Living with Freedom show, where we'll embrace what living with freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. That's 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific, here on Freedomizer Radio.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison, the show about everything and nothing at all.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same. And we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints. But they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook. Facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
Do you want to hear the truth about New York State and beyond? I'm Diana.
And I'm Dean.
Join us Thursday nights at 7:30 p.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, where we'll talk about everything New York State and beyond.
Yeah, nationwide news and local news and the tyranny that's going on here in New York State and what the Democrats are doing across the country, too.
We're going to talk about just about everything. Join us Thursdays, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, D&D, delivering the truth in New York State and beyond. See you then.
Hello, Freedomizers. I am Broccoli Man. When I am not fighting crime, I listen to the Proof Negative radio show.
I am the Wire Ritter. Not only do I forbid you to listen to Freedomizer Radio and the Proof Negative radio show, I am going to demand you wear a mask and get your naked body scan. We need to protect the one world government. You getting the real information hurts a crime syndicate. Do not listen to Proof Negative. You must now disrobe this instant so I can check your person for a constitution or cash money.
Anyway, listen to Proof Negative on Freedomizer Radio. Weeknights 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern. 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. FreedomizerRadio.com.
All right, so we are back, and I'm going to bring Sarah on right now. All right, Sarah, can you hear me?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Awesome. Welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. How are you doing today? Good, good. I'm glad. How are you doing today on this beautiful 4th?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty good. Enjoying my independence.
Amen to that. So why don't you share, we were messaging a little bit before the call, and you shared something so beautiful and so eloquent about why you're sharing, why you're joining me today, and why we're talking about this. And would you be willing to share that with us?
Yeah, I'll see if I can paraphrase. So I'm going to quote something from a Roman emperor and philosopher, Marcus Aurelius. It says, "What we do now echoes in eternity." A lot of you probably heard kind of a paraphrase of that from if you watched The Gladiator, the movie. and that was ironic because it came from a different character, but the emperor was talking that said that was actually in the movie. But anyway, just this concept that so many people do not know our history. And a lot of people nowadays that we hear, they just say, well, what's the point? What's, you know, why should I care about, you know, 56 old white guys and their wives and their children and all of the things that happened way back in, you know, 250 years ago? Why should I care about that? What does that have to do with me today? And so, you know, my passion for history, my heart for history comes from the fact that every one of us is part of a bigger story, and that we all have a part to play in it, but we're not the only part, right? This isn't just us. I'm not only concerned about future generations, because I have children and they'll have children and hopefully they'll have children's children's children. But I'm concerned about what we've forgotten from our past, because our past is what built this nation. It's what led us to this place in history. And not knowing that stuff, not knowing that history, can really cause a lot of problems for us moving forward. And it can have major detrimental effects on our present and future, because everything that happened in our past matters. and we think about that even just in our own families. You know, like what happened to us as we were children, as we grew up, those things have an impact on our present and on our future, how we interact with others, how we live our lives, the choices we make. And just because it's 250 years in the past does not mean that it does not have relevance to us today. And so, yeah, so that's why I have a love for history. I've had it since I was, oh gosh, I remember reading historical fiction when I was 9 and 10 years old. But after that, I started really diving into the origins of our history and kind of straying away from textbooks and seeing what was really going on. So, yeah, I've had it for a very long time.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And thank you for giving that little kind of like that preview and that explanation of your purpose. Mm-hmm. Something you said, think of something. So as you were sharing, I was pulling it up. As we're thinking about knowing our history, and particularly today as we're talking about the Declaration of Independence, maybe in a little bit we can read through just, you know, boom, 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 one name after another, the list of signers of the Declaration. And anyone who's listening, I would love your feedback as to how many names you actually recognize and how many you've never heard of before. Because if I were a betting woman, I'd be willing to bet it's less than a dozen names that we're actually familiar with based on our public school education. Now, anyone who's a constitutional scholar like Sarah probably knows a much larger, if not all of the names, much larger percentage. But there's a lot. There's a lot of names as I'm looking through this list. And, you know, full transparency, names I still don't recognize. That's just to show that, like, I'm not perfect either. I'm still, this is a journey. And, you know, as we uncover more things, it leads down to, you know, this plethora of additional resources and supporting information. So,
Yeah. For sure. No, and I've got a little bit on some of the signers, not specific names per se, but some information on what happened to them after they signed that Declaration of Independence, and it's amazing. Because nowadays we look at them, you know, if we have a good view of history, we look at them as heroes, right, and the founders of our country and stuff, and obviously there's the other side of things where people look at them as, you know, archaic old white guys, slave owners and hated God and all of that stuff, which isn't true, but we still have a different view of them. But I don't know if we fully grasp what exactly they gave up, what exactly they sacrificed when they signed that Declaration of Independence. I mean, back then they were considered traitors. So
yeah,
that's huge.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's something to really meditate and sit on for a minute, because it not even like metaphorically, it was literally putting a target on their backs when they put their name on that paper.
Yep.
And that's, as we think about stepping into our own freedom and liberty and into our own power, that's scary stuff when you think about it. It's most of us, unless we've been in some form of the military or truly being on some, you know, some type of front line battle, we don't really grasp what it means to have that target on our back. And so to just imagine what that must have felt like after all of these years of fighting and battles and dealing with Great Britain's baloney already. Then they did this, and yeah, I would love to hear what you have to share about what some of them dealt with.
Sounds good. Before we get to that, though, can I just do a quick recap of what brought these people, I mean, what brought these men to that table to sign that document and actually write it and knowing that they put their lives on the line?
Yes, please. Absolutely.
Okay. So the first We the People document that came to America was the Mayflower Compact. And that was in 1620. So this is, you know, a little bit over 100 years before before the Revolutionary War. And that document not only stated that we were going to be governing ourselves and governing ourselves with strength and power and all of these things, but it also established that America was going to be governed as a Christian nation. So what it says was, having undertaken for the glory of God and advancement of the Christian faith and the honor of our king and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these presents, that is, by the legal document and charter, solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and one another, covenant and combine ourselves together into a civil body politic. And that's, it goes onward. But just think about that. That was the first charter that absolutely established that America was going to be governed under the acknowledgement of a higher moral authority. So they understood that, yes, they could govern themselves, but if they didn't govern themselves with a higher moral authority above themselves, they would fail. And not only that, they wouldn't advance the cause of the gospel, which was their huge and biggest, that was their biggest goal, was to advance the cause of the gospel. And you can read that in, oh my gosh, so many, I mean, even going back to Christopher Columbus, in their journals and the writings of those people.
Right.
We talk about the founders during the Revolution, but these men and women who came here under persecution from the church, from the King of England, from all of these different places, these men and women were actually the founders of the founders, if that makes sense. And it just continues going on. You talk about the colonial era, and this was in the 1600s. The church literally was the foundation for all government. I'm not talking about one single denomination. It wasn't just one over another. It was the church itself. It was the body of Christ. Their sermons talked about liberty and justice and running a government based on a higher moral authority. And then there was kind of a lull in that, I guess. there was kind of a period of time where all those sermons kind of started getting dry and dull and boring, and people stopped listening. And so there was just this kind of lull in that. And then we had the Great Awakening. And a lot of people look at that as a part of history where it's like, oh, yeah, this massive thing happened in history. No, it happened over a period of, I think it was like one generation. So one generation was born and died during the Great Awakening. And during that time, there was a revival of this acknowledgement of this higher power, of the divine providence that had brought these people to this land, and of the need to continue to acknowledge that higher power in order to govern a land that was given to them. It was literally given to them by God, is what they, that was how they preached it, was this was granted to us. It was a gift. It was given. And so we have to steward it well. Right.
So when again did the Great Awakening happen? Like roughly
the Great Awakening, Yep, so the Great Awakening happened in, let's see, I'm trying to see, 1730s through the 1760s. So this was right before, when you're thinking just before the Revolutionary War happened.
Right. And you know what's really funny? As you were talking about the Great Awakening, before I asked the dates again, I realized what I was picturing when you were talking about the Great Awakening was exclusively like a European thing. Because I remember like this glimpse of learning about the Great Awakening in school, and I feel like a lot of our history was broken down into the different continents. And so it felt very disconnected to what was happening here. So when you put that in context in the way you just did, first the Mayflower Compact, and now that's like, holy, like that happened here too. And it's just literally creating more connections in the brain, more, you know, neuron connections.
Exactly. So George Whitefield was the one who kind of started it, and he started in Great Britain, and they didn't know what to do with him because he was this preacher that was basically saying all men are created equal, and we are all accountable to God for our own actions and choices. We are all sinners, and no one man is greater than another. So he was literally, in one sense, he was speaking treason against the king, and it wasn't you know, like overtly don't obey your king. It was just saying, no, the king is just as much answerable to God as we are, as we lay people are. And so they kind of like kicked him out. So while there was a Great Awakening that did happen in Britain, the founder of it moved to America and took his message to America. And he was one of many preachers, but he was kind of the one who started it all. In fact, him and Benjamin Franklin were very good friends. And as Benjamin Franklin aged in his later years, he kind of started turning from his life of, you know, debauchery and disillusion and stuff. And he started actually really grasping onto the concepts of who God was and everything. So even our least religious founders had a very strong connection with the preachings of George Whitefield and multiple other preachers. And I want to just as an aside, it wasn't just white preachers. It was not just white men preaching to everybody.
Right.
There were whole congregations that were preached to by black men, and they had white congregations. So this was not just a one-sided, one ethnic group thing. This was an all creatures under heaven type of a thing, all human beings.
Yeah, I'm so glad you touched on that because something I've been doing, and you know, because we talk all the time, but something I've been doing for quite a while is going back and listening to Chris Ann Hall's podcast. And, man, if you guys are not familiar with Chris Ann Hall, and this is sort of a rabbit trail, but it's relevant. In her archives, she talks so much about really the forgotten history. In particular, she and her husband, JC, really touch on black history and women's history and their involvement in developing our freedoms, because our founders and framers, like you just touched on, we're not just old white dudes.
Right.
And there are so many names that we should know, and the black community in particular should know, and the female community should know that we don't. And so I'm really glad that you touched on that because, that is so incredibly important to know and acknowledge that this was, when we say the U.S. is a melting pot, it really is, and it was from the start.
It was. It definitely was. Yeah, and yes, were there people who... I mean, when we look back through history, we cannot look at history through the lens of our 21st century vision, right? We have to look at it in the context and the cultures of those days. Even when we're reading the Bible, we need to be looking at it through the lens of what was going on in that day and time, right? That doesn't change the foundational principles, and that's what we need to be focused on. What are the foundational principles, and how do those apply across the generations, across these eras of time, even when the cultures and the groups of people are different, right? They were still clean. I mean,
yep.
Even back in the Great Awakening, they were still understanding things that we understand, we should understand today because they're foundational. And so when Whitfield would preach his sermons, one of them was called Father Abraham, and he was literally asking the question, Father Abraham, who do you have with you? You have Catholics, you have Presbyterians, you have, you know, all of these different denominations. And Father Abraham replies in this sermon, right, no, of course not. And he's like, well, who do you have with you then? And he says, he who fears God and works righteousness shall be accepted of him. And that was in Acts. That was part of Acts 10:35. And that was something. This was what brought these founding fathers together during the Revolutionary War. In fact, during one of their first Continental Congress meetings, they actually, one of the founders said, hey, we need to pray first. And there were multiple denominations. And so there was actually some pushback. They're like, no, I'm not going to listen to a Presbyterian pray over my, you know. And they brought up George Whitfield's prayer again, or his thing on the on Father Abraham, and they actually talked about it and said, no, this is not, that's not the point. We're not our denomination. We are followers of Christ. We are believers in the God of the universe. And so we're going to pray over this Continental Congress because we have no one else to answer to, right? And so it changed the course of even just starting the idea of having a revolution, because they acknowledged that the creator of the universe he wasn't looking at their denominations.
Right. And that makes me think that at least some of them must have been leaning on Jeremiah 32:41, where God's saying, I will take in them to do what is good for them, and with all my heart and mind, I will faithfully plant them in this land. Like,
yes.
Realizing and recognizing the faith that they must have had, especially at that time, you know, to literally traverse halfway around the world to do this, that alone is a feat. And then as we continue talking, you know, listeners, you're going to hear feat after feat after feat that they overcame. And it's mind-blowing. Most of us in our lifetime hardly even have to deal with anything of the magnitude of one of the things they dealt with. If you've ever moved countries, you know, that's probably the one most of us can relate to. But and I don't think you were listening in the call yet, but you touched on, you know, the foundational principles, and that's something I was using, or I was referring to in different terms. I was talking about like the original intent and context, and really understanding the why of what was happening and why certain decisions were made the way they were, so that we can then understand how it applies to us today. And totally reiterating what, you know, what we're talking about here and getting a good idea of that context. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure. And that's exactly what you were saying about the education system. The original intent of education in America was for the, again, going back to the Mayflower Compact, was for the furtherance of God's kingdom. That's, you read any of the founding fathers and they will reiterate over and over again that public education, private education, there had to be a foundation in the Word of God. Their sermons preached it. There was a historian who said the Constitutional Convention and the written Constitution were the children of the pulpit. And that comes out of the idea that, one, many of the founding fathers, I think it was, like, was it half of them? I think it was about half of them, had seminary training. Not all of them were ministers, but there were actually several of them who were ministers of the gospel through their seminary training. So every one of them had a foundation. Isn't that insane? Yeah. And here we're like, there were articles written in, was it the 60s and 70s about how badly the founding fathers hated Christ. What were they reading? Because these men literally came out of seminary with a working knowledge of the scriptures, not only in the English language, but in the original languages. So they read Greek and Hebrew, and they understood it in ways we didn't. They took it from, what do they call it, a sensus plenior, where basically it didn't just have one strict meaning. And they used that in writing all of their documents, including the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's crazy. So the other day, my partner was listening to some sport, like XM Sports Radio, and one of, I don't know if it was a guest or one of the hosts, was literally, like, bashing the Founding Fathers. And, you know, it's the same old stuff, how they were, like, slave owners and all of this stuff. And some of these different things about Jefferson and Washington. And even just from the calls that you and I have had together, like, instantly I was able to, you know, put a squash on that. And, we're recognizing that, holy cow, this is still so rampant in our education from when we were kids to now. That it's no wonder that people are so feel so angry and upset under what they think is truth, because if that is what truth really was and in history really was, I'd be upset too. And so, and that's, I mean, yes, I'm upset, but in a different way now. Now that I know and I'm continuing to learn truth with a capital T, and I make that distinction, you guys. I should have explained that further. I'm going to touch on it now. When I say, like, what we knew is truth versus truth with a capital T, truth with a capital T is really ultimate truth. It's one of those things where this is the thing that really happened. You might have your truth about what you perceived and you understood, and I might have mine, but somewhere in the middle there, the actual truth of what happened is. It's just that we all have our own perception. Maybe it's from the angle, you know, where we were sitting when we observed the thing happen, and so we only got to see that part of it. And so that's where, when I say truth with a capital T, I mean, what really happened?
So that I mean, that really goes into the next little portion is the education. So you go from the people who traveled to America for religious freedom, right? Then you get into the ministers and the preachers of the gospel, and those ministers and preachers of the gospel started the first schools and really influenced the early common laws in America regarding education. So at one point, right before the Revolutionary War, we were at our highest literacy rate. And I want to say, I'm trying to remember the exact statistics. I want to say it was between like 90 to 95% of men and women and boys and girls in America were literate. And the reason why they were literate, and this was one of the laws, early laws in Massachusetts, it was called the Old Deluder Satan Act. And more laws followed after this. It was because they believed that Satan wanted to keep us illiterate in order to keep us from learning the laws of our land, and not only that, but especially the Word of God. Those two things were paramount. And so they literally put laws in place that said, you parents have to, whether it's through public education, through private education, through homeschool, whatever, you need to make sure that your children are literate and can read the Word of God and can understand the laws of our land. So, you know, nowadays we hear all of these different educational agendas, right? And we need to be diversity, equity, inclusion, all of these things. That was not the original intent of education. It was to give us a moral standard, both through God's law and through human law.
I don't know if you've seen the third God's Not Dead movie, but I think of that exact scenario where these parents, you know, are bringing these kids together to basically be homeschooled through a church co-op, and the social worker comes. I'm not going to give the whole thing away, but the social worker comes to, quote-unquote, observe the curriculum and the learning environment and raises all this cane because what does Noah have to do? Like, what lesson is there to be learned in Noah that if you don't listen to God, you die? Kind of like... And there was just this full-on skepticism, and it's just mind-blowing how we've gone from seeing our spirituality as reason to learn and be literate and be well-versed to the opposite, educated from, you know, from religion. And it's just a total flip-flop. And for everyone listening, if you have not seen the Gods Not Dead movies, highly recommend. Like, highly, highly recommend. Good series.
Definitely, I agree.
That
was
a total squirrel moment, but...
Oh, yeah, totally. But that goes exactly into who has the right to educate, right? Who has the authority to educate our children? And that's us, the parents. We were given that first authority. And by the laws of the land, when we first started in America, and this was even before the Revolutionary War happened, this is when we were still colonists, right? We understood, in our history, we understood that there was a reason why parents were given authority over their children. It wasn't to own them. It wasn't to, you know, lord it over them. It was to educate them so that they could learn God's and man's laws for themselves and understand what the difference between right and wrong. And that even played out in our universities and colleges. So out of the 246 colleges that began in America, 93%, so 229 of them were directly founded on the Christian faith. Other ones had, you know, they had the Christian faith was integrated in some way, shape, or form, but these were directly, that was in their charter and in their bylaws. And out of, let's see, out of all of them, out of all of them today, I would guarantee there was less than 1% of them at this point who are still adhering to those values and foundational principles that founded those universities.
Right. And I'd wager to guess that those who are actually following it, not as a form of legalism, protecting rights and liberties and all that, that 1% goes down to zero. Because such a high percentage of them uses religion and those religious foundations as a form of legalism and control and patriarchy. And that was so not the intention behind it. It was supposed to be liberating.
Yes. Well, the whole concept of university, unity in diversity, right? Where you come together from different walks of life and you discuss and you debate and discourse. Thank you. I was going to say the wrong word. Discourse on those troubling things, those foundational principles, those issues that needed to be hashed out in order to understand truth and liberty and all of those things that the founding fathers, they came through these universities, right? They came through these schools and they understood that there was a higher calling that they had to be a part of, not because they had anything personally against, like, some of these people still strongly loved their former land, right? They loved Britain. They loved their home country. They honored the king in many ways, but they also understood that they could not have the freedom and liberty if they did not first understand that they could not have any other king but Jesus. And so that was a huge part of it, and it came through our pulpits and our education system.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And, it's when I think about those in the education system now, and I'm talking about students, not in the higher ed or in the actual teaching side. So when I think about students in any level of education today, I see so many people and kids who seem to just be lost and searching. And I'm not saying everyone, but it is an observation that I've made, and it just, there's something missing, and it goes back to that why, to that purpose. And if we don't have a purpose in life, then all of this is meaningless. Memorizing these facts for a test, for a grade, it's meaningless without purpose. Doing well in school just to get to college to pay 30, 40, 80 grand in student loans for practically the rest of our lives, it's meaningless. and that's a whole nother story, but it's meaningless if we don't have purpose.
Right.
Yeah. And something I observed in what you were sharing, and I guess are still sharing, is all the way back to the Mayflower Compact, like, the Declaration was definitely not our first attempt in the land that we call the United States of America. It was definitely not the first attempt to declare our independence and our liberty. Yep. And that's something that most of us don't know. Like, if we learned about the Mayflower Compact, it was just date and who, maybe, you know, who would involve, but not again, why.
Yeah.
That's,
well, and if you read it, today in textbooks, Yeah, if you read it in textbooks, in textbooks today, they remove anything that has to do with divine providence, with God Almighty. They remove all of that. They put little ellipses there. And people don't ask, what do those ellipses mean, right? Like, what are we missing from this larger work? But that's what they're doing. They're taking God out of things. And so we completely miss a huge part. I mean, some historians who have a belief in God like to call it the golden thread of history. God's thread has been throughout history, one, because he created it, right? And then two, because he's not the type of God who just sits up in the background and just watches everything happen. He has an active hand in it. And that was something that brought the Americans to the Revolutionary War, is they understood divine providence was not just standing back watching. He was literally giving them his blessing to do this, because they understood that he had freedom and liberty for them in mind, setting the captives free. That's one of the reasons why Christ came, to set the captives free, right? And they were captive to a government that did not acknowledge God's higher authority.
Yeah. It reminds me of, again, I'm going to share about Chris Ann Hall, because I love her. I think she's a super awesome woman. She has Liberty First Society, which it used to be Liberty First University. And what I love about her course that I don't get to see in many other resources. Now, I know there are others out there. I just haven't taken them yet. But what I do love about hers is, as she goes through, for instance, the genealogy of the Constitution, she shares actual references, like footnotes. And so does David Intent in his original intent book and all of his resources. But they share the references. So they're literally telling you, don't take my word for it. Go back to the original thing and read it for yourself. So you can see that what I'm sharing here is in summary form is truth, is what really was said and done. And I wish that had been part of, obviously we know behind the education system was not to give us full truth with a capital T, but can you imagine what our education would have been like had they had all of those footnotes in as we were learning about, even if they kept the ellipses and all that stuff, like, and you know, if we were reading them for ourselves as we were studying it in school, holy moly, would we have such a better context? And we wouldn't have had the wool pulled over our eyes so many times. And that's something that we're going to get to, too. That being said, let me pause for a commercial here quick. And then during our last 30 minutes, actually, sir, is there anything else you want to add before we cut to the commercial and do the last segment?
Well, I mean, there's so much to talk about the Revolutionary War. So I'm just going to go right into just the idea that there were many things many choices that people made, many sermons that were preached, and the things that led up to these men taking a stand and saying, no, we're not going to die on our knees under tyranny. We will live as free men, or we will not live at all, basically. And so that was, I mean, all of that leading up to, from the education to the pulpit, all of those. In fact, the first battle in the Revolutionary War was led by a pastor who brought his men out, and 19 of them died.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's the stuff. For me, that's the gold nugget, is really looking at who the founders and framers were. Like you said, that first pastor and all of that. It's just religion and spirituality really was the heart of it. And knowing what they were fighting for, the context is just so pivotal. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to cut to commercial, and then when we come back, let's start with just reading off quick the name of the signers of the Declaration, and then we'll move into the Declaration itself, okay?
Perfect.
Great, sounds good.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever and whenever you're tuning in from, my fellow Liberty lovers. This is Amber S. from Living with Freedom Ministries, reminding you to tune in on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific time, for the Living with Freedom show, where we'll embrace what living with freedom can look like physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and in everyday life. That's 2 p.m. Central, noon Pacific, here on Freedomizer Radio.
We talk a lot about the kingdom here, and we talk a lot about what most churches are afraid to talk about or don't even know to talk about, which is what the first century church was really doing. But just talking about it is not enough. We encourage everybody to join us in their local neighborhoods, in their local communities, to find out more about what they can do to seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness. Gather with others who are already starting this road or starting to turn around and do things differently. Join us on thelivingnetwork.org or at hisholychurch.org. Go to the network links or go to preparingyou.com. Join the network there. It's all the same. And we'll try to hook you up with people in your local area. They will not be perfect. They don't walk on water. They are not necessarily saints. But they are talking about seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. And join us on Facebook. Facebook.com, His Holy Church, all one word. Join us there. We'll give you updates so you can start doing some studying and thinking about these things and start looking into these things for yourselves. But it's just not enough to sit and listen or to talk about or to say. You must become a doer of the word.
Looking for something different? Looking for something fun? Join Dan every Monday on the Freedomizer Network, 9 to 10:30 Pacific, noon to 1:30 Eastern, for Common Sense with the Educated Redneck, Dan Ellison. The show about everything and nothing at all.
Please check out the Barefoot is Legal radio show right here on Saturdays, 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, that is 10:30 a.m. to noon Pacific Time, as we show you all about your barefoot rights and living a barefoot lifestyle. And for more information about the 501c3 nonprofit Barefoot is Legal, please check out barefootislegal.org.
And I'm going to share an affiliate that I like to use. I use Tall Organics for my hair care. I used to struggle with hair loss and dandruff, dry hair, and just really, really struggled with hair care. And I was using what was supposed to be a really clean product at the time, and it just wasn't helping. And then one of my friends, who's actually the owner of Tall Organics, and that's T-A-H-L, introduced me to her hair care products. It's all Ayurvedic based, organic, and so it's all plants, no chemicals, no fillers, none of the yuck. And I cannot tell you, within 2 weeks of me using the hair products, the dandruff, the itchy, the dry, the like tight scalp just all but disappeared. And my hair health has just skyrocketed. My scalp health has been better than it's been since before I had my son, which is when all of this started. So if you are interested in trying a totally plant-based, clean hair care system, I highly recommend using Tall Hair. And you can use Amber20, AMBER20. For 20% off any order. And you can go to tallorganics.com. So that's TALORGANICS.com. All right, Sarah, and we're back. Let's go through that last list, or that, not the last list, but that list of signers. I don't know if you have it up, but I did pull up a list. Do you want me to just read through them really quick?
Yeah, go right ahead.
What was that? Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
So listeners, whether you're listening and commenting on Facebook or through the blogtalkradio.com app, let me know what percentage or which of the names you are familiar with. And, yeah, it's going to be mind-blowing. So there's John Adams, Samuel Adams, Joshua Bartlett, Carter Braxton, Charles of Carrollton Carroll. That looks a little funny. Samuel Chase, Abraham Clark, George Clymer, William Ellery. And if I butcher one of these names, I apologize. William Floyd, Benjamin Franklin, Elbridge Gerry, Button Gwinnett, Lyman Hall, John Hancock, Benjamin Harrison, John Hart, Joseph Hughes, Thomas Hayward Jr., William Hooper, Stephen Hopkins, Francis Hopkinson, Samuel Huntington, Thomas Jefferson, Francis Lightfoot Lee, Richard Henry Lee. The order is a little funny because I'm running down the list. Francis Lewis, Philip Livingston, Thomas Lynch Jr., Thomas McKean, Arthur Middleton, Lewis Morris, Robert Morris, John Morton, Thomas Nelson Jr., William Packa, Robert Treat, Payne, John Penn, George Reed, Caesar Rodney, George Ross. There's a lot. Holy moly, I'm starting to, like, get named out. Benjamin, Dr. Benjamin Rush. What was that?
I said 56 of them.
Right. Edward Rutledge, Roger Sherman, James Smith, Richard Stockton, Thomas Stone. I feel like I'm reading a graduation list. George Taylor, Matthew Thornton, George Walton, William Whipple, William Williams, James Wilson, John Witherspoon, Oliver Wolcott, and George Weiss. Holy moly. Mm-hmm. So I don't regret reading that list because it's definitely important to know who our founders and framers really were. But you said 56 of them?
There's 56 signers from all 13 colonies.
Wow. You guys, even as I'm reading them, you could see or you could hear that I was stumbling over some of the names. Obviously, I've never even heard of all of these names, and that is sad when you really think that these 56 guys came together really on our behalf because they were really not just looking out for themselves. They were looking for, posterity. So, like, thinking of for the future, these 56 guys were thinking about our future 200-some years in the future. And we don't know their names? It's kind of like an insult to their name. Anyways, I just wanted to read through that. If you want to, go ahead.
I was just going to say, David Barton talks about this in his talks where he'll bring up the picture of all of the signers together and he'll point out and say, okay, point out, you know, the people, you know, and you get Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Benjamin Franklin, and maybe one or two others. And they're like, what about all the other ones? Right. they may be the most famous names, but every single one of these men stood up. So they did the final draft of the Declaration on July 4th. It was written and finished on July 4th, 1776. And that picture of them all signing it was actually kind of inaccurate. They made the painting for posterity's sake, but because they basically, that was their declaration of war, which they'd already gotten out to King George through, was it the Lee document or Lee resolution, I think it was called? the British soldiers had already painted them as traitors, and so there was a price on each one of their heads before they even got to the signing. So they had to come in like in ones and twos and, you know, small groups to sign it over the next period of the next few weeks after July 4th. But that was the day that final word was written, and it was agreed upon by the whole Continental Congress.
Wow.
This part is going to probably make me cry a little bit, because these people, they understood, and when we read the declaration, we'll read the last part of it, and they, every single one of those men who signed that declaration understood what they were doing. And so John Hancock made his name as big as he possibly could, and he said it was so John Bull, or King George, could read my name without spectacles and may now double his reward of £500 for my head. £500 back then was £100,000. So he was literally, like, they were looking for John Hancock. And so he continues and he says, we must be unanimous. There must be no pulling different ways. We must all hang together. And then we have Benjamin Franklin's famous thing, who he had a big sense of humor. He said, yes, we must indeed all hang together, or most assuredly we shall all hang separately.
Right? Oh, man. Yeah. And I realized I didn't add a disclaimer at the beginning of this like I'd planned to. So let me just add that any emotion, any cracks in our voices, especially as we're reading these historical documents, it's not just because we're women. It's not just because we're emotional. It's because it went from a passion to truly being life-changing as we learn this history and the truth about where we came from. It's really become our battle cry to share this information with everyone, because if we don't get back to knowing these truths,
yeah,
I'm very concerned that our future is going to remain very grim. And so getting back to these foundations and really pouring our heart and soul into learning this stuff, to learn where we came from so we know where we're going, is just of utmost importance. So,
And understanding how important freedom really is, what these men went through to fight for. In fact, John Adams even said, you know, if you guys, he was talking to the youth of the next generation or so after the war, and he said, if you guys don't preserve what we fought and died for, I'm going to regret having fought and died for it. Like that was how serious it was to them. There was a letter years after the war was over that Dr. Benjamin Rush wrote to John Adams, reminding him of that day where they said, this is the document that's going to get us all in trouble, basically, where they started signing it. And he says, do you recollect the pensive and awful silence which pervaded the house when we were called up one after another to the table of the President of Congress to subscribe, to sign our names to what was believed by many at that time to be our own death warrants? The silence and the gloom of the morning was interrupted, I well recollect, only for a moment, by Colonel Harrison of Virginia, a very strong and large man, who said to Mr. Jerry, a very small man at the table, I shall have a great advantage over you, Mr. Jerry, when we are all hung for what we are now doing. From the size and weight of my body, I shall die in a few minutes. But from the lightness of your body, you will dance in the air an hour or two before you are dead.
Oh, my goodness. The morbid humor. Oh, I love it so much.
Even in the midst of that, they understood. I mean, there was this solemnity to it. There was this, they understood that they were going to potentially die for this. And yet they could still laugh about it and say, okay, you know, this is, you know, we'll make light of it. But all that to
right,
say.
Right, because laughter is medicine. And sometimes if you don't laugh, you're going to cry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is where the tears come in, because nine of the signers died of wounds or hardships during the Revolutionary War. Five of them were captured and imprisoned, many with very brutal treatment. The British soldiers were not gentlemen when it came to prisoners of war. Their wives, their sons and daughters were killed or imprisoned.
they were left penniless. One of the signers was actually at his wife's deathbed and had to run, and all of his children were taken captive and died. 12 of the signers had their houses burned to the ground. 17 of them lost everything they owned. Every one of them was hunted down. some of them were given, they were all offered immunity and freedom and rewards and all that stuff if they pledged to, if they basically broke their word and went back to the king. Not one of the signers defected or changed their stance throughout the entire thing.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of dedication, you guys, that we are talking about here. That is unwavering faith in knowing truth. Because our country, I'm going to touch on this super quick, and then we have to get to the declaration quick because we've got only about 13 minutes left. But and then I lost it. Never mind. I distracted myself. Well, so I guess we were just meant to cut right into or jump right into the declaration.
I'm good with that.
Yeah. Yep. So anyways, I'm going to start, and then what we're going to do is about partway through, we're going to kind of discuss the grievances quick, and then Sarah's going to wrap it up. So I'm going to start reading the Declaration of Independence. The unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, when in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it, or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence, indeed, will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that men are more likely to are more disposed to suffer, while evils are sufferable, than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security, patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present King of Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove these, let facts be submitted to a candid world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, Sarah, do you want me to just start kind of reading through the grievances and then kind of interrupt when you want to add something in?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that out of the 27 grievances, we always hear the one about taxation without representation. That was literally just one of those grievances. The rest of them
right.
had way more to do with more than just taxation. It had to do with the destruction of our liberties and the God's authority and saying, nope, I get to grant you these or take them away as I wish.
Yeah. Yep. And
I'm going to invite everyone listening, dig into each of these grievances, because honestly, Sarah and I could do an entire series all on this document alone and those 27 grievances. So we're really just hitting the tip of the iceberg on this one, because being Independence Day, we want you to hear the Declaration of Independence. So, so let me read through those here quick. So we're talking about the king. So whenever they say he, they're talking about the king. He has refused his assent to laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to attend to them. He has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. Holy moly. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time, after such dissolutions, to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others who encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of land.
Can I just say something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, some of the rest of them, there are a couple more dealing with legislation, but this was the king being all three branches of government, executive, judicial, and legislative. And so this is exactly, he attacked their ability to legislate for themselves in the colonies by stating that no law could be passed without his execution, without his permission. And so this is, if you read the Constitution, you will read every one of these grievances were addressed within the Constitution.
Yep, exactly. It's basically like the Declaration was the call to action and the Constitution was the response.
Yep. Exactly.
So, all right, I know we're looking at 6 minutes left, so I'm going to read a little bit faster on these last few. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone and for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payments of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation, for quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English laws in a neighboring province
establishing therein an arbitrary government and enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies. For taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our government. For suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us in all cases. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with the circumstances of cruelty and perfidy. I don't know that word. Scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation. He has constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions.
Yep.
Whew. Okay.
Yeah.
Did you want to hit the rest?
Yeah, I do. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attention to our British brethren. We've warned them from time to time of attempts by their legis unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We've reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here. We've appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured them by the ties of our common kindred to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of co-sanguinity. We must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them, as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions due in the name and by the authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. And that as free and independent states, they have full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. I almost made it.
I know, right? And on that note, I see we have about 10 seconds left, so I'm going to do a quick wrap-up. This has been Amber S. and Sarah P. in episode one of my Living with Freedom radio show on Tuesdays. And I'm over. So Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Central. Let's see, 2 p.m. Central and noon Pacific time. We'll be here next week, or I'll be here next week, and we'll keep the conversation going. Have a great day, guys.